And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started.
Well, Patty, it's been an incredible last couple of episodes where we got to hear in depth from you about the Pleasure Seekers' first adventure to the Big Apple to audition for ABC Booking Agency and Joe Glazer. And you were booked at Trudy Heller's The Hot Spot in Greenwich Village, where Joe could see you. He signs you. I mean, this is just a whirlwind. So welcome back. It's been a ride.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. And we definitely felt a big turning point with the band and how it was becoming quite serious with all our time now devoted to the band and travel. And that came to make it fairly quick escalating with this major introduction out of Michigan to New York City. We felt we were like driving toward the big time, you know, a magical trip.
Oh, I love that. And for those who may not have heard the previous episodes, definitely go back and listen, because Joe Glazer at that moment in time was a heavy, heavy hitter in the biz. Trudy Heller was a major, major hitter in the biz. So this is just so exciting. But one of the things that we have been talking about, and I don't think that we can now let it go. And also, you have an incredible story. But for those who may not have heard, we talked about Joe Glazer's connections in Chicago and New York with the mob, and that he tried to put it aside when he opened up ABC with Louis Armstrong, no less. And so I've been thinking about the chronology here, and I'd like to do a little bit of a recap before you tell us this story. So on season two of the podcast, you and I spent one episode in particular about a gig that the Pleasure Seekers and Leo Fenn did while you were in New Jersey. And on that episode, I promised that we would not only revisit it, the story in more depth, but I also now want to contextualize it for the listeners, also for me, because now I get the chronology. So it's March right? 1967,
Spring vacation, right.
right? It's spring break. You're leaving the Big Apple now. You're heading home to Detroit with Leo and everybody. This is just so exciting, right? Yay. And Joe immediately starts booking you. And so he books you in to this New Jersey gig or to a bar, which I want you to expand upon. And now I get it was en route home to Detroit. So this is a Joe Glazer booking, probably to get you more money. You can tell me if that's true. But I really think this story speaks to and underscores and really shines a light on the intensity of the mob in the music biz and their connections. And it's not just Detroit, it's not just New York, it's everywhere, including
Everywhere.
Jersey. So tell us now this whole story and just go for it. I may have 100 questions, but start, please.
Okay. We got to the gig. It was a bar. It was a New Jersey club, and the owner was great. The bands would play on a stage behind the bar. So we did our setup, sound check, checked into a hotel. The gig started out fine. We were going down great. And we noticed a few guys coming in and taking seats right in front of us, like at the bar, and we're right behind the bar. I mean, they could probably look up our skirts if they tried hard enough. And soon the shit hit the fan. Leo overheard from someone that these guys were some mob punks from a different area. And it started with Darlene having to deal with one of them, on the end, flirting with her, oh, I was a drummer too, and blah, blah, blah. He started bugging her. And she, accidentally on purpose, hit him with her drumstick, hit the drink in his hand. And it spilled all over her, over him, and he laughed it off, but she was a little freaked that he was, bugging her so much while she's trying to play. So we go on a break to the dressing room, and Leo advised us what he knew, and we were pretty freaked out, not knowing what might happen next, because what he was telling us was a bit scary. He gave us strict instructions that we had to get out of the bar fast after our last set. He was real concerned about any danger because these guys were just staying in front of the bar and drinking very heavily, and he'd already heard that they were some mob punks. At that point, they weren't acting up yet, just, drinking and laughing and whatever. He said no matter what they did, flirting wise, we were to joke and fool with them and stay cool, like we were gonna go home and change and come back to party. And they bought it. So as we went on stage for our ending set, of course, during that set, they started pointing and picking out who they wanted to get with in the band. And, Leo heard a lot of that. So he got more, scared. The end of the set came and we did our flute routine and got the hell out of there quickly. Leo had insisted that we go without him, and that freaked us out even more. He wanted to stay and make it natural, like hang and joke with them, making our leaving flirting plausible. So to further set the scene, there was another mob guy named
Wait,
Chipper.
so Patty, I do have 1,000 questions. Hold on, because
Okay,
I want
okay.
you to, well, in the sense of I want to hear everything. So Leo obviously understood that they were mob punks.
Yeah.
Did he relay that to the pleasure seekers before the guys got out of hand? I mean, did you know they were mob punks?
Yeah, Leo had heard that. I'm not sure whether it was from Charlie or what, but he had heard it because he's standing there near the bar and stuff, and he could hear what was going on. So he picked up a lot of it. So he was aware, and that's why he warned us before we went on for our last set.
Okay, so the other thing is you just mentioned the name Charlie, and so could you tell us who Charlie is? And I can't believe we actually have a photo of
Yes, we
Mob
do.
Charlie with your sister Susie. So tell us who Charlie is, because Charlie is not a bad guy in this scenario, correct?
No, oh my God, no. Charlie was a guy, he was an acquaintance. He had been hanging out in New York at the gig. And after that, and later when we returned to New York, he was always around, almost like this secret protector. He had a huge crush on Susie, very respectful. He never made a play on her. He lived with his mother in New Jersey. He was just a real sweet guy, big guy, too. So he was there hanging, that Charlie was there.
Well, I'm also curious. So Charlie probably tipped off Leo since
Yeah,
they did
probably.
not have mob ties. On the other hand, I'm wondering conversations that Leo and now Joe Clazier may be having. Maybe Leo ahead of time knew now, and I don't know. I'm just curious. There may have been some insider stuff, but this is where, again, now continue with the story. This is where it gets real
This
with.
is where it gets real about the mob and how sometimes one area of mobsters didn't know what the other area was doing to wreak some havoc, you know. Forward to the hotel, we're waiting on Leo, and he does show up and furious regarding this booking. The next AM, we went to pack our equipment and saw the hideous results of the previous evening. It was shocking to our, I mean, we're teenagers, for God's sakes. The bar had been cleaved in half, right in half. And I mean, just destroyed. It was a mess. And we did not come, the punks were angry because we didn't come back to party. So they took it out on the bar. The owner of the bar was in the hospital, and later we heard that he had died.
Oh.
He had died. He actually died from his injuries or whatever. They wrecked the whole bar, you know, just having a ball, these stupid punks. And oh my God.
Well, a couple of things, Patty, that again, we did talk about this, but I want to make sure people who didn't hear it in the second season, they left your instruments intact,
Only
correct?
because of Charlie.
Okay, so tell us that part.
He said, he must have said, as they were wreaking havoc, Leo was already gone. He said, "These girls did nothing to you. You leave your equi their equipment alone." So he must have had a passing relationship with them or knew who they were, you know. And they did. They didn't touch our equipment. It was the only thing left standing. So, I mean, they were punkster lowlifes and they were out to cause trouble. So Leo could not reach Joe. You know, in the morning, we wanted to get the hell out of town. So we went and got our equipment, and Leo was so furious, and Joe was so apologetic. It was, you know, something he didn't expect to have happened. And he promised Leo heads would spin. So apparently, Joe made some calls to his mob connections, you know. I mean, like I said, he was like a businessman, but he had these connections. And he called Leo back with some of the most intense words none of us would ever forget. I can't believe he said this. Joe said, "Don't worry, it won't happen again, and they will never bother anyone again." It was that word, anyone, not just
One.
he made it clear they were offed, you know. I mean, mob punks and, you know, their bosses were pissed that they did that. And, you know, no one wanted to cause trouble between the different gangs. So they got in big trouble, boy. They were off.
Okay, a million questions, even though we talked about this. Okay, so I never got it that it was Joe Glazier who said
Yes.
the line, they'll never bother anyone again.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm so naive sometimes. How did you know that that meant they were offed?
Oh, it was, you know, I mean, we knew about the mob. We were from Detroit, where they definitely played into the news often,
Yeah.
and heads did indeed spin. We had a new M word to add to our labels: Magic, Motor City, Motown, Mayhem, and now the mob.
No.
Now, we knew what they were. My God, one of my best friends growing up, her sister married the son of a top mobster. Right around the corner of our street, you know. We were never involved in any of that stuff. But did it hit our lives and the news and gossip and talk? Of course. The mob was everywhere. And they had this love affair with music. It was very prevalent in that era.
Oh, it's just fantastic. I just, this is amazing. I find all of it incredible. Well, Patty, the pleasure seekers, as you said, I mean, you grew up in Detroit, yes, in a suburb, very much a suburb of Grosse Pointe. But
Right.
you were, as to use your expression, you were definitely, not falling off of a, what is it, turnip truck or cabbage truck. You were totally savvy about the music biz, at least in Detroit. You knew about the mob, as you said. You also, your dad, your brother were in the biz and all of that. But I just feel, and tell me if I'm exaggerating here, or maybe this is just me. This is a contact, a real bona fide incident with the mob. I mean, now it's not just like my friend's friend that we knew down the street and ooh,
Yes.
hush, hush. I mean, people were offed. The
Yes.
bartender is, if that's what you're, the club owner ended up dying from
Yep.
his wounds. So I'm just, did you think for a second, what the hell have we done by signing with Joe Glazer, or was this just completely par for the course? I'm curious on your thoughts.
I have to clarify, really, I must do that here. Joe Glazer and ABC were at the top of the booking agency food chain. He did have mob friends. However, he was a straight-up CEO of his company, and he had top talent nationwide in his agency, well-known stars, and he was very well respected in music. Of course, there was probably that undercurrent of people knowing he had some connections with the mob as well. But I must say, this was the only incident that ever happened, and it never happened again. We stayed with him. He booked us all the hell over. And, I mean, he took good care of us. We got a lot of work from him, and it was personal and appreciated. So we had no other problems with him. It was only this New Jersey incident, the first one. I mean, luck, but we took it in and we understood about the mob. Maybe we were naive because we were still teens, but we put it aside and we carried on with the excitement we'd had of New York City and being, signed with a top agency who did right by us the rest of the time of our tenure with him.
Well, and if you want to be utterly, I don't know what how to put it, I mean, he took care of you by making sure
Yeah.
these mob punks never hurt anyone again. I mean, that's just he was watching out for you, and it's amazing. And you just brought something up that is the perfect transition, because I'm hoping, or I that this story, this mob incident, didn't damper your excitement. You know, you dodged this mob
No.
bullet, if you will. You know, obviously the mobsters didn't, and now you are going back to Detroit, and you have achieved this amazing, monumental moment. I mean, so it didn't damper it. Were you riding high? What were you thinking in that car ride now back to Detroit, knowing what you've just achieved?
I must say one thing about what you just said. I don't think that Joe necessarily ever intended to have them offed. I think maybe he wasn't aware of how far they would go with these little fights between punks. I mean, they were out that night to cause trouble. So, I'm sure he might have been a bit surprised by the action that they took, even though he was friends with them, So it might have surprised him. But leaving New York City and arriving home, it was like, how you feel like a big adrenaline rush after a great gig? That's what we were feeling, even with the New Jersey thing put aside. We had to come down from that New York City energy, and it was hard. What an experience. And we were safe. It was handled. We were riding high on the success of the Trudy Heller gig. Dad was so proud of the success of the trip and our signing with a top national agency. We were high as kites.
I was just going to say, okay, first of all, the response from the families, because you mentioned in a previous episode that all the parents said, absolutely, you can sign with Joe Glazer. And of course, your father, Art Quattro, was so proud. Your brother, Michael Quattro, would say, of course, that's what happened. They're fantastic. It's normal.
Yep.
It's normal. But I'm curious about the reception by of your friends, of your, you know, local fans, anything that you remember about, and were you written up in the press and they signed with ABC in Detroit and in Grosse Pointe?
I'm not sure that they rolled it up. I'm not sure we bragged about it. I think we had gigs, so we got right back to work. I mean, we played the Rooster Tail pretty quick. We got back in town and got back to our gigging. So, I mean, life went on, but we were excited.
Well, you just raised another question I have, which is, so now that you've signed with Joe Glazer and ABC, is he now taking over the booking for you in Detroit, or is that still Leo Fenn's domain? I mean, you've already played these gigs before you signed with him. Joe
We
Blake.
had these gigs booked before we went to New York. So, pretty much the Michigan and Detroit stuff was in the domain of Mickey and Leo, I mean, they did a lot of those bookings, and we had a few to do as, that period of time ended, the Rooster Tail and some other ones,
Well, Patty, we are definitely going to pick up on these gigs, the Rooster Tail with Paul Revere and the Raiders. But for
Okay.
now, you are heading home, riding high, as you said. I mean, I have such a huge grin on my face, imagining what all of you were thinking, and you, Patty, the groundbreaking founder of the Pleasure Seekers. I mean, kudos to you, my dear.
Oh my God. What a ride. What a ride.
You know, the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. But can't you still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Break on!